And now, The Low Post.
Welcome to The Low Post Podcast, where we are somehow halfway through the NBA season, which means it is officially time to start thinking about All-Stars. And to do that, I could think of no one better, no one who's more excited about the All-Star game, All-Star weekend, and a fixture. If you roll into like the GQ party at 3 in the morning and it's really thumping, you know ESPN's Kevin Arnovitz is going to be at the center of it. It's like Joel Embiid and Kevin Arnovitz, and they're at the center of it. Mr. Arnovitz, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
Good. Did that accurately describe your All-Star weekend habits?
I mean, yeah. I'm actually going to Boulder City, Nevada for All-Star weekend. I'm very excited about this.
I'm going to the Dominican Republic. My wife.
That
wanted,
is very nice.
My wife wanted. We do. It's time to. I haven't taken a vacation in season since I missed Linsanity by accident, and so I figured this is safe, and we're bringing the grandparents so we can hand my child to them and be normal human beings for a couple of days. I actually talked to Al Horford about it. He said, "You're going to the fake Dominican, but it's still nice." I said, "I know. We just want to go to a beach for a few days." I'm going to miss All-Star, though. I do like All-Star. That doesn't mean that we can escape our obligation to pick the participants in an exhibition game. Do you want to start with the East or the West?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting question. I feel like, well, I mean, obviously the West is populated with more talent. I mean, it's incredible when you kind of do this exercise, the contrast. You have to talk yourself in the West out of guys, and in the East you have to talk yourself into guys. So I defer to, you know what, the East always gets precedent in this country. Like television time, listings, everything. As a West Coast denizen, let's do the West first. It's also the better conference.
Wow. Okay. We'll do the West first. So here are the rules. I made you. I didn't demand final picks. In fact, my picks are not completely finalized yet. But when I do this, I like to ignore the fan vote completely. And just pick.
Yes, I don't even know.
I don't even know. Apparently, Luka and Dwayne Wade are doing very well. And pick 12, the full 12 person roster for each conference. I lambasted the NBA last week for the continued fealty to both positions and conference. Like, why are we doing 12 and 12? It's stupid.
Can I rant about a couple of things and then we can get it out of the way so
yes.
We don't have to like complain anymore? All right. I mean, if we're not playing West versus East, let's just take the best reserves irrespective of conference.
Easy.
But even more than that, and it's something, you know, we've talked about in award voting. Is anybody in the NBA office actually watching basketball these days? When we're talking about front court and back court, I mean, I think you and I have been talking for years about point wings bigs, right? Like, the fact that there is very little distinguishing twos and threes on most teams these days, we need to get to a point where it's perimeters and bigs, or again, point wing big or something, because it's just the modern game does not accommodate these classifications, and I just don't get. Surely they know this. Like, this is the product. It's actually a great thing. We talk about positionless basketball. This is one of the great. They sell this brand of basketball as a reason to tune in. So why not have All-Star voting, or for that matter, awards voting, conform to this new era of basketball?
Well, So I lambasted, another word that I do not know the origin of, the NBA office for all of this stuff.
It sounds like a turkey.
Yeah, am I basting something?
Yes.
I don't know how to baste a turkey. I'm really not very useful.
For
almost any household. I have to cook dinner tonight because my wife is sick. I have to. My wife is sick, so I had to do everything in the morning. We only have one child. It's not like a horde of children. It's just one. So I had to do everything in the morning. I have to take her to gymnastics class at 3:30, and gymnastics is just they run around. There's no like gymnastics being done, and then I have to cook dinner. And like I don't know how people do this every day. It's a lot of work. It's terrible. Anyway,
I have a cactus.
Yeah, cactus sounds.
That's what I care for. Yeah.
It doesn't talk back. Anyway, the league responded to me. There's nothing like when you write something critical of the league and the 212407 number pops up on your phone. Oh boy, here it comes. I literally answered the phone by saying, okay, here it comes. Give it to me. And they politely pointed out that yes, the positions are still a thing. You have to go guard, and three front court. But for the reserves, even though they have two guards, three front court, two wild cards, they do tell the coaches, you know what, you can be pretty much as flexible as you want in order to get the team that you want. So I just threw the positions out for the reserves. I just said seven best players, I don't care.
Yeah.
So okay, Western Conference, let's do the starters. And let's frame it this way. I assume Steph and Harden are in. There's no debate. There's nothing. They're unanimous, right? Those are the two guards?
Nothing.
Okay. So the first big question in the Western Conference is, you have three front court starters remaining. Here are five candidates, two of which must come off the bench by rule. You can only start five players. One year they should try six on five and see how much of an advantage is six players. Anyway, you can only start three of Durant, LeBron James, Jokic, Anthony Davis, and Paul George. Those are five players. You get three starters. I'm pretty sure who I'm going to pick. Who are you going to pick?
All right, well, Davis and LeBron are in for me.
Interesting.
Like that's it. And then this is just honestly one of the toughest exercises I've had. I want to, again, and because we speak in pants, it's okay. I need you, in terms of this criteria, to assess the validity of the following statements.
Okay.
Number one, team success should play a substantial role in selection, as for that matter, should team underachievement. So we're talking about multiple players on a lackluster team or multiple players on a good team, that we should consider the team standing. Do you put on a scale of 1 to 10, 10 being of absolute import, 1 being forget about it, where do you place that belief?
I'm glad you brought this up because this came into my mind more than ever for this All-Star selection. I don't know why the league is broken out this way. But I think it will come down to some guys on the Pelicans, and then, you know, in the East, how many do the Raptors get? How many do the Bucks get? Do we put Vucevic in? Things like that. I think it is valid. However, it is possible. Like you do have these. You know, I'm interested to see if you have Gallinari or Tobias Harrison. Like the Clippers are winning a lot because they are 10 or 11 deep, whereas the Pelicans are a trash fire after roster spot number 5. And so I do think, yes, it's possible that the New Orleans Pelicans have two All-Stars and the Denver Nuggets have one. And by the way, last Thursday, so 6 days ago, the TNT guys went on a whole thing about how Jamal Murray needs to be in the All-Star game. The Nuggets, they're the number one seed in the West, deserve two All-Stars. Well, okay, but like, and the Nuggets, although they are winning with depth, like their bench numbers with Morris and Lyles and Plumlee on the floor are incredible. They have also been out three starters for much of the season. So I'm not sure how much they're winning with depth. What they're really winning with is Jokic. And also, after Golden State bothered to try really hard, for 40 minutes last night and reminded everyone, yeah, we're by far the best team. It doesn't sound as sexy to say, oh, the second team in the West with like the seventh best net rating in the league deserves two All-Stars. Like all of a sudden, Denver doesn't look like, oh, they've got to have two All-Stars. So I go back and forth, but I thought of it. Mm-hmm. I thought it, but the flip side is like, so take the Clippers or in the East, take the Bucks, who have had incredible depth. I mean, the Bucks bench, they're getting contributions from like 12 guys every game. Is it fair to punish Chris Middleton or Eric Bledsoe or Danilo Gallinari because their team is deep enough to win when they have bad games, like a lot, versus reward Jrue Holiday because the Pelicans' depth is so bad that Elfrid Payton's injury, an injury to a guy who is so below average for his position that Phoenix was like, yeah, nah, we don't need him. Like, we just don't want him on our team. Like, is a disaster for the Pelicans. I just think it's an interesting question, and I'm glad you brought it up, Kevin Arnovitz.
All right, so I have two others. How much should injury missed games count against a candidate? And I'm thinking, and we'll get to Oladipo later, but you know, choosing a guy based on the last 12 months of his body of work, even accounting for the fact that, yeah, he's come back. And like, so should injury missed games, because it's something in the awards we really factor in. This is more persona-driven. Do we, like, how deeply should I consider that? I mean, that's another question.
Okay, first of all, I don't believe in the 12 months thing. I base 95% of it on what's happened in 40 games this season. It's an annual game. Okay. I like to reward him for this season. The injury thing raises two questions. I feel like everyone needs an official date where we stop consideration for All-Star. Like, if Klay Thompson scores 70 points tomorrow, his All-Star case is going to look better. I just feel like we need a date so that you can say he missed X games over this period of time. But to answer your question, it's in the eye of the beholder. You get up to, like, 12, depending on 12, 13, you've missed, like, 25% of the season. Depending on your stature, that's at the point where I get concerned enough to break ties. You get up to like 16, 17, 18, unless you're one of the guys, you're close to out. And if you get to like 20 where John Collins is, you're just out. If it's very right. close to half for me, you're out. But I respect everyone's ability to go a different way.
Okay. And the final one's a little more abstract. And it's a debate unto itself. And I'm just going to put it out there. I don't know where I land on this. I'm a centrist on a lot of things, but the All-Star Game is a marketing and fan production unlike end-of-season awards, and if a player offers greater intrigue, fan appeal, symbolic importance for the league from an ambassadorial standpoint, that should be considered in his candidacy. And obviously, I'm talking with the perfect illustration. This would be Luka Doncic, right? But like, look, this is a fan marketing weekend. This is basically the moment when the league says, hey, look at us, to the entire world. It is an exhibition, right? This is not the awards that which we'll probably do a show in April about. And so that I think there is a case. It's a very populist case. I intelligent people believe this, and I can't discount it out of hand. Should it play any factor in selection?
I don't mind if it plays a factor for people, because I agree. I mean, the game is a well. Last year, the game was actually all right when they now that
yeah,
they
kind of cool.
pick the teams and stuff. But the game has been a joke for most of the last 15 years. I have been snobby about it, admittedly, because my whole thing is when we get to Hall of Fame candidacy and stuff. You know, you see, oh, he's a 7-time All Star, he's a 4-time All Star, or like, oh, Kobe Bryant is a 14-time first team All Defense, even though the last five were like complete charity jobs. These things begin to matter, and I just think it's just a more fun exercise for me to sit down and think about who have been the 12 best guys in each conference this year without regard to any of that noise. But if people want to consider those things, that's fine. The slam dunk contest and the 3-point shootout, like, that to me is what all that is for. But then you get a guy like Doncic. What are you going to do? He's going to get in the skills competition? Nobody. The skills competition is like, it's like the JV part of that night. It's the event that's kind of like, it's a little like,
it's like the ninth grade team.
Yeah, it's right. Like, oh, we're gonna break out some cones and like climb some ropes. It's like a gym class. It's not, it, you know, it's you need skills, but it just looks kind of silly. So that's my answer. So you went Steph, Harden, LeBron, Anthony Davis, and question mark for the last spot.
Okay, so and obviously for me at least, it's Jokic, Durant, or Paul George. I mean, those are the final three. And this is really tough. The case for Jokic, and I'm leaning Jokic a little bit, is, and it does kind of fall into that first team success thing, is this is not a team with, oh, multiple really great players. I've always been a Jamal Murray fan. I picked him preseason rookie of the year last year against my better judgment just because I just love the player. While acknowledging advanced stats is not everything, this is a guy with a below average PER this morning. He's got a true shooting percentage of 51.8. He's had some just otherworldly performances. And you know what? 50% of the time, he's not a terribly efficient player who's helping them win a lot of games. Jokic is the star of a team that has a star right now, and that is, up until about 18 hours ago, was leading the Western Conference, an absolutely brutal conference with 14 competitive teams. And I don't know how, and by the way, oh, we can also talk about, yeah, and he's also averaging, you know, 20, 10, and 8. So, you know, And I don't think he's the defensive liability people believe he is. He takes up a lot of space. He's frequently in the right place. He cannot move his feet very fast, admittedly. But
how heavy can you be before taking up a lot of space becomes a bad thing? Like, how fat could you get in the NBA, but you still take it's like a nose tackle in the NFL.
This is the Oliver Miller test.
Yeah, is that what we're doing here? Some of those nose tackles are like, yeah, it takes three guys to block that guy. He's really valuable. I'm like, yeah, it's because he weighs 400 pounds. He's going to keel over tomorrow. Anyway,
this is the Oliver Miller test. Now, obviously, Paul George, I'm in love with his season. I just absolutely from a two way standpoint, the guy that's 38.4% from three now on a team that desperately needed that and needs that. He's getting to the line at a really healthy rate. He's rebounding. I think he's been a really adept second side playmaker. They have nobody at the two who can do that. Like he has been fantastic. And leaving him out as a starter is almost unconscionable to me. And then of course there's Durant. And I don't think Durant needs much introduction. This is a guy who, you know, is very close to being a 50-40-90 guy right now. And he's averaging 28.2 points per game. The win shares 48 favor Jokic if we want to really dive deep. So as does Vorp. I mean, I'm inclined to go Jokic also for aesthetic reasons. I just love playmaking, run the offense through him, bigs. And again, Denver's success this season. It ain't that, oh, they're super deep, but they've gotten some really nice contributions. They've drafted really well. They've sustained a lot of injuries largely because of Jokic. This is a superstar on the number 1.5 or 2 team this morning, in the Western Conference. And so I'm gonna, and it's really difficult, but I'm gonna go Jokic.
They are the number 2 team in the West. They're 3 games ahead of the Thunder with a worse point differential. So I think it's fair to ask, like, how much better are they really than the Thunder? Are those 3 wins and losses really? Now the Thunder are slumping. They somehow gave up 142 points to the freaking Hawks last night. So I disagree with you. I have LeBron coming off the bench because I just think, again, when you've missed now, he's missed. He's played 34 games. The Lakers have played.
And fair enough. He's missed
11 and counting. So I'm going to put him on the bench. I'm going Durant, Davis, tentatively Paul George, although I might pencil Jokic back in there. I just think Durant is Kevin Durant. I don't really need a case for Kevin Durant. He's played every game.
Right.
He's a monster. AD Jokic is actually interesting, and that's going to be the first team center debate. Maybe Joel Embiid gets in there. First team all NBA center debate. You know, there's a case to be made, again, given team success that Jokic has had I just don't think you can look at the numbers and say he's had a better season. What AD is doing is ridiculous, but then you say, why don't they win more? Why do they, like, if you look at the Pelicans' numbers when AD plays without Holiday, they're, like, minus some alarming amount. Like,
it was a couple of weeks I was looking at that. That's weird.
It's, like, minus 20 per 100. It's not, like, minus 5. It's alarming. But PG has just been so great on both ends Thunder. In a season where Westbrook, who I assume we'll talk about, has not been himself for the most part, that's where I'm leaning. I don't mind if anyone puts Jokic in over any of those guys. It's 2 of them got to come off the bench.
Look, all 5. I could very well concede every case, even including AD. Although I do think when Tim Frazier's playing 20 minutes a game for your team, you are hampered. I don't want to blame Davis for that.
The thing that's really hurt the Pelicans is Etuan Moore has just vanished. And part of it was he picked up a couple injuries that seemed to sap him a little bit. But there was that 2-week period where he was regularly putting up between 15. He had a couple games of like 30 where he looked like, okay, they have another guy here who can create some offense for them coming off screens and hitting his little floaters. And that has just disappeared. And when you take him out and you take Mirotić out, and Peyton out, they just don't have anything. And Randall's trying his best. He's scoring a lot. That's never going to be a problem. The dude loves to score. He just wants to rampage toward the rim and flick in little layups while he does judo kicks with his feet. But defensively, they're trying to have him guard fours so AD can stay on fives. He just can't guard fours. It's just an imperfect solution. Okay, let's go to the bench. We have seven reserves. I will start this part. I have five locks. Now, you may disagree, so we'll stop at the locks. But I have five locks. Here they are. Locks number one and two are whoever you leave off the starting front court. So for me, in parentheses, in pencil, that's Jokic, and in pen, that's LeBron. It just seems silly to have LeBron. LeBron's going to come off the bench in the All-Star game. That's funny. So then I have Karl-Anthony Towns, Rudy Gobert, and Damian Lillard as locks. And then I have two spots that are debate spots for me that we'll get to. Those are my five locks again. Bron, Jokic, or we'll call them remainder number one and remainder number two. Towns, Gobert, Lillard. Are any of those not locks for you? Do you disagree? How have you proceeded?
I have three locks as well. Towns, Lillard, and it's funny because I get slammed for not, you know, buying into the whole mythology, but I have Russell Westbrook.
Oh, very interesting. So, Kevin Arnovitz. I do not have him as a lock. I will tell you where I have him shortly. Make the case.
Well, I mean, we can start with...
Don't start there. Don't do it.
What?
You're going to say he's averaging a triple-double.
No, I can give a shit.
Okay.
Sorry, I don't care about that. No. They're a really good team, as you said, point differential. And it's Paul George, and it's, I mean, where are they getting Grant for? I mean, holy cow! You know, it's pretty amazing what they're doing. You know, the production is there. I can't believe, like, I'm now the guy making the case for Westbrook after I put him like third in that big MVP three-way.
So did
Leonard, I. Harden 2017. So it's just ironic that here I am just saying, yeah, okay. I mean, look, assist percentage and your 50%.
Are you holding your nose physically as you? You're on the phone, so I can't see you. Are you holding your nose?
I mean, that's very difficult to do. I mean, now it's funny. I had him in there, and now I'm looking career low win shares for 48.
Oh, this is so exciting. You're going to back out. You're going to back out live on the air.
I'm trying to think. I did this. I've been doing this for the last 3 days. I'm trying to remember my rationale. But I had him in there. And you know what? I can't really defend other than it's OKC. They've overachieved. He puts up production, albeit not terribly efficiently. This is funny. And it's kind of embarrassing on a national podcast. It gets many downloads.
No, but it's hard. But, it shows you how hard this is. This is hard. People think this is easy. Well, I mean, it is easy in the scheme of life because it's sports. It's fun. It's not like we're sitting here reckoning with real things that are of actual consequence. But these are actually hard choices. And this is why I stopped checking Twitter, because all of Twitter is just, you said this thing I didn't like about my team, thus you hate my team, or you haven't watched my team. I'm like, no, actually, just I only get 12. It's hard. Sorry.
Wow, I didn't really. Was it that bad? 22.8% from three.
It's the worst ever.
You know what?
It's the worst ever.
Yeah, this is a rough. This is a rough thing. I mean, but I said it, so I'll keep it. By the way, can we talk about Damian for a second?
Yeah, you didn't have him as a lock. Did you have Gobert?
No, I have a lock. I have Towns, Lillard, Westbrook.
Not Gobert. Okay.
Oh, I have Dame.
Okay.
This guy, all right, of the 20 most efficient pick and roll combos this year among combos that I think have 125 sets together, you know he has four of the top 20.
Yeah,
Collins,
I know.
Nurkic, Aminu, Leonard. Like we talked, this is a pick-and-roll era of the NBA point guard. This guy is so skilled as a half-court floor general. You know, their offense has been very nice this year. Their defense has been much better than the results in terms of Portland's fascinating. I think they're still top two in the league in opponent shot quality in terms of stinginess. They just don't force turnovers, and we've been talking about that for years. But Lillard is just so good. And it's funny. I mean, you know, he was a solid fifth in the MVP voting. You know, Portland takes a lot of heat. They can't get over the hump. I think there's still this, like, hangover of the sweep. You know, CJ's not having his best season. Lillard is unbelievable. And it's a testimony to Curry and Harden that there isn't, we're not having the, you know, sort of the pick and choose debate at that position. This guy is so good. And I just kind of wanted to kind of throw out some Lillard love because I just, like, the quality of tactician at that position is just unreal. And I just still love watching him play.
So Portland, as we are now 3 weeks or so from the trade deadline, is one of the, I think, under the radar really interesting teams to watch because Lillard has been unbelievable. Nurkic has slumped the last three or four games, but has generally been very good. McCollum, as you said, has been slightly disappointing. The Zach Collins train kind of went off the rails a little bit in the last, like, he just hasn't happened yet. Harkless, you know,
don't know. Like the trajectory for Collins? I still do.
I still do, but I'm just saying in terms of what he's going to bring this year, I think I expected a little more. Harkless, you just don't know if he's going to play every day. Turner's fine for what he is. Aminu is down to like 33% from deep and just is like, you know, you just don't know and teams are going to leave him up. But they're seven games over. Their schedule for the rest of the season gets pretty easy. I could see them being a more aggressive buyer at the deadline than people might expect. I think they're going to put their pick in play and I think they're going to try and get someone who really moves the needle, whoever that is, with Dame and CJ. Maybe not. Maybe that's a little strong, but I just think you mentioned the sweep hangover. Everyone there knows, including Dame, that people are going to wait to see it in the playoffs. And I don't necessarily think that's fair because they had that one series against the Rockets where he hit that all-time shot to win the series. Then they had Warriors, and last year obviously was a debacle. Anyway, that's a Portland thing. Listeners, you know I like anything that saves me time. Time is my whole thing, and getting tickets online got to a point where it just got too complicated. There are hundreds of secondary market sites, and you just panicked. Oh, my God, did I forget to check that one? Oh, I've got to check those five other ones. How do I know I'm getting the best deal? Maybe I'm getting swindled, and all of a sudden 2 hours has gone by. SeatGeek has solved all of those problems. That's why SeatGeek is the way to go to buy tickets to Broadway shows, comedy events, sports events, anything, concerts. SeatGeek pulls millions of tickets into one place so you don't have to worry about going anywhere else. You know you can find the seats for a price you're willing to pay. It's easy to use. It has a nice color-coded user-friendly system. It has green dots for good deals and red dots for less good deals. It's easy to see on a map where your seat is. It's just never been simpler. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek with confidence. It should be your go-to ticket source for literally any event that requires tickets. And best of all, my listeners, you people get $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. All you have to do is download the SeatGeek app, enter promo code LOW. That's my last name, the name of this podcast, L-O-W-E. Today, that's promo code LOW for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. SeatGeek, life's an event, and we have the tickets. So do you have Gobert in at all?
Yeah. So my final two, and it's a long list, as I'm sure it is for you, a list that includes Tobias Harris, Gallinari, Gobert, Mike Conley, because damn it, Mike Conley.
I know, I'm going to feel so bad.
Come on. At some point. I mean, isn't there just like a lifetime achievement award or something? Doncic is on my list because I pursuant to
he's deserving.
Three, which is,
he needs no charitable points. He needs no needs no public fascination charity.
And then there's, you know, Aldridge and DeRozan are nominally on my list, and I say nominally because I've never been a huge fan of either's game. Really love DeMar as a guy. But they're on the list, and there are probably others to be here. I have Gobert and Tobias Harris as my final two, with an appreciation that, Pelton and I were talking about this on Press Row the other night, and he said he had correspondence with you, still trying to figure out how Gallinari factors, who's had a fantastic season, and when you really break down some of the more granular numbers and advanced numbers, there are metrics that say Gallinari's been more valuable to the Clippers this year than Tobias, who's just been unreal. They've both been unreal. And I do think in terms of team success, one of those guys has to go. And Gobert, just when I started digging in, just rated out so high. And
Gobert,
I know we don't generally reward.
Gobert has had an absolutely monstrous season. So it's funny, the team success thing with the Clippers, you know, they're one game ahead of the Spurs with the worst point differential. So if it applies to one of those guys, like, it shouldn't it also apply to the Spurs? These are the one of the Spurs. These are the things that I struggle with. I don't.
The answer is yes.
But you only get 12, and so I think the solution for me might be that it applies to the Spurs are really interesting. I have the numbers in front of me right now. For the season, they are essentially. I'm going to get I had the wrong numbers in front of me. Give me 2 seconds here. They are with DeRozan and Aldridge together on the court. They're plus 24 for the entire season in 1,300 minutes, which is essentially nothing. They're 500. And they are, with neither of them on the court, plus 122 in 400-plus minutes. Like, their bench has been really, really good. And if you break down, you know, what with one on, one off, I mean, they've played most of their minutes together. I just don't know what to do with that. In consideration for All-Star and applying that same sort of, well, the team's been good, they should get one criteria.
Yeah, I'm looking at sort of, I've actually pulled up now sort of a player comp finder with the two Clippers and the two Spurs. And just to see, you know, if now you probably have left off Westbrook, correct?
No, Westbrook is going to make my team.
Right, so now we're basically down, if you've got Gobert, then you and I are now choosing between one of the Spurs or Clippers.
Wait, Towns made yours, right? Towns is on yours?
Oh, yeah, Towns is really on mine. I mean, he's just...
So here are the numbers for the Spurs. DeRozan and Aldridge together, I just gave you, it's plus nothing. Aldridge on without DeRozan, minus 6.3 for 100 per 100 possessions, so bad. DeRozan without Aldridge, minus 4.5, so bad. And then the bench, like neither, plus 13 per 100 possessions. Now, there could be some garbage time and all that factored in, but the Spurs have been, you know, I think they've overachieved a little bit. Both those guys have been really good. I'm not sure there's like a super ironclad case that either one should be an All-Star.
And that's where I came down. I just don't have Aldridge or DeRozan individually. It was fun. What's so funny, though, is that question, you know, with Pelton, which is, you know, every time you start breaking it out, like, okay, let's filter by win shares of 48. Wow, look at Gallinari. Let's look at true shooting percentage. The guy has a true shooting percentage of 63.2%. That's ungodly.
So because I'm a nerd, I made a little spreadsheet. Yeah. I made a little spreadsheet with like 12 or 13 borderline candidates in each conference, and I put like 7 advanced stats that normally I don't check all that much, but the cases are so close. I was just curious: win shares and box plus minus and VORPs and VIPs and PIPs and PERs, and then I have a column summing them all up in the end, which is obviously imperfect, but I can sort by either one. And Gallo, the case for Gallo, but just by watching the Clippers all season, just the eye test said to me that Tobias Harris was slightly more important to their team than Gallinari, and the numbers, he's 50-40-90 or close, are there. But the advanced stats just love Gallinari. Love, love, love. It's not even close.
I mean, I'm on one of those pages. It's just unreal. Like, they don't say that he's marginally better than Tobias, to say nothing of Aldridge and DeRozan. I mean, they are saying decidedly better.
But if you ask somebody with the Clippers, who is the single most indispensable player on your team? I bet
the answer is Tobias Harris.
What
No, they all say Harrell. Like, that's the
I was going to say, I'll bet you'd get more votes for Lou Williams or Harrell than you would for either Gallo or Harris, precisely because both of them are good enough and similar enough to cover for the other one in the event of an injury, whereas they have no other Lou and they certainly have no other Harrell.
That's true. But the love affair organizationally, I mean, it is fun. I mean, the Clippers organization loves their roster. It is sort of the happiest place on earth. I mean, and I can't say I wasn't at the game. They lost against New Orleans the other night, but it is just they love their guys right now, and it's really interesting because, I mean, obviously this summer the plan is to upgrade. But, yeah, I think – I guess you could make a case for Harrell, but I'm not going to, certainly.
No.
Gallinari. So I have Harris with no real conviction that he's decidedly better than Gallinari, if at all. But that is sort of my 12th pick of the sort of Spurs-Clipper pool of considerations. I'd love to include Doncic. because I love Doncic. Who doesn't? But I kind of landed on Harris, and maybe I'm too deferential to the 50-40-90 game as well. There's something about it. You know, for all the novelty stats, triple doubles, 50-40-90 has always been one of my favorites. Let's call it the Myers-Leonard Award. But 50-40-90. So I've got Tobias as my 12.
You know who doesn't like Luka Doncic? Well, I don't know if that's not true. Who might not like his presence anyways? Dennis Smith Jr. on the trade block.
That's interesting.
I get it. The intel on Dennis Smith has never been great. Maybe he just wants the ball all the time and has come to the realization, well, we have this guy that's better at all that stuff than me and 6 inches taller, and so I'm just not going to get that in Dallas, and that makes me angry. So maybe internally the situation is just untenable in a way that I don't understand because I'm not living it as a member of the Dallas Mavericks organization every year. Maybe they know they can get something really good for Dennis Smith. I suspect that's not the case, and the best they can get is like a low lottery protected or worse first round pick. But we'll see. I just, on pure skill set, and I know the numbers with Smith and Doncic together have been bad. The numbers with Doncic but without Smith have been good. I just wouldn't be so quick to give up on it. Again, not knowing how untenable it is, like, I want multiple ball handlers. I want a guy with the size profile to defend opposing point guards. I like Dennis Smith as a catch-and-shoot, catch-and-drive, explosive catch-and-drive guy off the ball who maybe can do some stuff with second units as the lead guy. Like, I like the outlines of that, and I'm not sure that I would be as quick to punt on it as the Mavericks are, again, not knowing everything that's happening there.
Yeah, I assume they're atmospherics and all kinds of weird stuff going on. Because, again, I just – in the era where every coach tells you we need multiple, like, playmakers on the floor at all times, it just, again, somebody marshalling our second unit, he will become – where is he – how good is he at catch and shoot? I haven't looked at those numbers.
His threes are up to 38% this year after 31% last year.
You know
what? I assume catch and shoot is better, but I will pull it up now. I checked this a couple weeks ago. I remember it being good, but I check a lot of things and they all sort of
– I mean, see, to me, if I'm Orlando or Phoenix, I just jump at it. I mean, I protect any pick, but I just think – you know, there are basically three teams right now that need point guards badly. Orlando, Phoenix, and the third, it may not be as obvious, but I've been watching a lot of Detroit Pistons basketball, and Reggie Jackson was perfectly cast in Oklahoma City. He is a very serviceable backup point guard in this league. The lack of guard play in Detroit is absolutely destroying that team, and it's excruciating to watch them manufacture possessions. And I always said that Blake Griffin is your best passer, and he is like by leaps and bounds. That's problematic. You need to have somebody who is a perimeter who can actually generate good looks for other people, and they have nobody. It is a black hole. The ball just drips around the perimeter into Blake, who gets immediately doubled. It is so ugly, and the problem for Detroit is they just don't have their spreadsheet is so unforgiving right now. Like, they don't have a lot of assets to trade. They have a ton of bad contracts, a ton of marginal guys that I can't imagine anybody's interested in, and it goes on forever. This is not a team that is opening up space next season, and it is they desperately need someone. It's like, you know what, Dennis Smith would immediately become, by leaps and bounds, the best perimeter player on that team. Bullock, I'm fond of Bullock, but obviously Bullock he doesn't have any attributes of a point or a playmaker. He's a good player.
Yeah, look, I
but
get
it. Is just
Dennis Smith's judgment here and there. Sometimes he can hold the ball too long, and this, like,
he's
young.
20 years old.
He's young. He's young. I want to get back to All-Star. I don't want to talk about the Pistons. I'm going to put Russ in probably, and here's why. It's interesting, the experience of just watching these guys, and I've geared my last 10 days of game watching to let me find these borderline guys and watch them as much as possible before I make my picks here. You just feel Russ every possession, in a way that you don't feel Mike Conley and Drew Holiday and all the other candidates that I'll name. You just have to deal with him and his physicality every single trip and his ability to just get at the rim almost whenever he wants. And that just has to have some sort of psychic toll on the other team, like a fear factor. Now, he bails you out a lot of those possessions with these jump shots that are not going in at a rate that is scary. And so you ask yourself, well, because he's always doing stuff, am I giving him too much credit for doing stuff when a lot of what he's doing is hurting his team, or there's these errors of commission, and am I over-penalizing? Yeah, Mike Conley was just on the floor for 5 minutes, and, you know, had a couple nice pick and rolls, but then floated around over here, and, like, I didn't notice him, and maybe I'm over-punishing errors of omission or whatever. But I just think Russ is just his ability to get to the basket and manufacture easy shots for Steven Adams and Jeremy Grant, and you look at their team, they only have two guys who can create shots. And, well, Schroeder, I guess the third coming off the bench, but, like, they just don't have a lot of good offensive players on their team. And the numbers with Russ on and Paul George off are now a slight positive after starting negative. I think there's enough there. That leaves my last spot, and I don't know what I'm going to do yet, but there's Mike Conley, Drew Holiday, Klay Thompson making a late push, Doncic, Jamal Murray I'm crossing off, both the Clippers, both the Spurs. Capella had an interesting case before he got hurt. We haven't talked about De'Aaron Fox, who I think actually has an interesting case. Booker's team is too bad and he's missed too many games. I might be leaning to Drew Holiday. Is that crazy?
I love Drew. No, it's not crazy at all. Not at all.
I might be leaning to him over both the Clippers and both the Spurs. And I guess this is why the team success thing is gnawing at me so much.
That's what got me up.
Yeah, because like, do the Pelicans deserve two? That doesn't seem fair, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're now only three games behind the Spurs in the loss column. You know, they're four games behind the Clippers. Like, they've been significantly worse. Their point differential actually is better than the Clippers and equivalent with the Spurs, which shows you how bad they've been in close games. They are a complete, like tire fire isn't strong enough. They're a tire conflagration. They're like multiple tire junkyards of fire when Holiday is on the bench. I could be swayed to either of the Clippers. I probably would put both the Clippers over the Spurs. I probably would put Aldridge over DeRozan if I had to pick a Spur at this point. I think he's past DeMar given his offensive play of late and his vastly superior defense. I just don't know it. I kind of keep coming back to Drew Holiday. I just wish he had shot threes a little better. Let's go to the East. You ready to go? So you don't think that's crazy? You think that's okay?
Not at all. I mean, that it's a tough call.
Let's go to the Eastern Conference, the junior varsity. You want to give your five starters first? I assume that four of them are pretty easy choices, and by that I mean Kyrie Irving, Giannis, Kawhi, and Embiid, which leaves one guard spot, and immediately you're like, oh my god, what am I supposed to do with this?
I have a space between those four names and the rest of my list here. Yeah.
Okay, so the four are easy. Those are easy. I have in erasable pen a second guard. Do you have you even gotten that far, or are you still in?
So I do, and so the just on the surface, these are my sort of finalists for the starter.
Okay.
Kemba Walker, Ben Simmons. You know, Oladipo would have been the easy pick, but he has missed games. He's clearly still recovering, so his numbers have slumped. And look, I kind of decided, and I know that every day, anytime you tune into any NBA conversation, they're basically people killing Ben Simmons for everything he can't do, how he's going to torpedo their chances in the playoffs.
Not me. Not this guy.
You don't have to guard him. And no one talks about the things that this guy does do. You want to line up Kemba versus Ben? And by the way, I love Kemba Walker. I mean, this is not I don't want anyone to interpret this as any indictment on Kemba Walker, who I love watching play.
I want people to interpret that way. I want Arnovitz indicts Kemba Walker as a headline.
Because the entire Charlotte Hornets nation is going to...
By the way, do you know how stupid... I'm going to go Windhorst now. Do you know how stupid some of these aggregators are? So I wrote this column about Simmons and the Sixers last week. I don't know if you saw it, but it was about the fit,
of course,
all of these things. And I said, if the Sixers ever got to the point where they wanted to trade Ben Simmons for multiple shooters and playmakers, like if that was the model of deal they wanted, if, then something like Jamal Murray and Gary Harris would that's like the apex of that deal.
By the way, Zach, I saw you write that. I saw those fun trades at the bottom of the column, and I said he is going. This is not going to end well.
So, that's like the apex. Two young, good shooters. Murray is going to be a very good shooter. He's only 33% from deep, but he's going to be very, very good. And they can both play make. That's what you want. The next sentence is, Philly is not doing it, and Denver would never do that because they would risk the good vibes of their season. And still, there are aggregations of Lowe suggests Nuggets to trade for Ben Simmons. Like, no. Like, so you're going Ben Simmons is your second starting guard.
I mean, here's what I think is would be deceptive. The guy who can't shoot, who has the better true shooting percentage? Simmons by leaps and bounds.
And then you'll hear, well, that's because all he does is get dunks and layups. So yeah, if you can get seven dunks a game, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and dunks count. I mean, I know they don't count for three, but they count for two, and they're pretty decisive. Vorp, you want to do the nerd stats? Simmons, they love him. Defensively, I don't even think one's a liability and one's an asset. And so for all the Simmons hate that is out there this year. And I think there are issues. I think it's something that, you know, Sixers are always going to kind of have to account for. But Ben Simmons is the second best guard in the Eastern Conference of the NBA. And so he is my other starter.
I don't think I don't really have issue with that. I actually think his defense has been a little worse this year than it was last year where he, I think, exceeded expectations. But just his positional versatility alone is worth a lot on that end. I don't have him as a starter. I have him as an absolute lock to make the team, so who really cares?
Yeah.
You haven't named my again, this is written in somewhere between – this is an erasable pen, I think I said. You haven't even named the guy I have an erasable pen right now as the second guard.
No, I mean, the other guards I have on my – I mean, I talked about Oladipo, but, you know, Beal, Butler.
There you go. Bradley. I have Bradley Beal in erasable pen.
Yeah.
As the second starter. I just think he's been phenomenal all season. What's happened to the Wizards is like negative 100% because of him. They are actually good when he plays, including without Wall, and absolutely terrible when he doesn't. He's quietly putting up like 25, 5, and 5. I'm comfortable with that choice. I do think that Simmons' complete lack of a jump shot is a real thing that his critics are it's fair to criticize it. It's fair to wonder how that impacts one's ability to build a team around him, and specifically to build this particular team with Joel Embiid and now Jimmy Butler. But statistically, he's probably been better than Beal this year, but I'm going Beal. Okay. I assume Oladipo made your reserves.
Yeah, I have. So, the Western Conference is kind of staggered. I have five locks as a reserve that include Beal, Kemba, Blake Griffin, Vooch, and Oladipo.
So we have the same. We have this. Effectively, we have the same 10 locks. We just have Simmons and Beal flipped around. Stars or yeah. My other locks are Blake Griffin, Nikola Vucevic, and I was surprised. I mean, I know intuitively Vooch is having a great season. His numbers are just off the freaking charts, including plus minus and Orlando's net rating with him on the floor. And I mean, it is just, if for people who are going to say team success, why are the Magic so bad? Well, they're almost in the playoffs, which in the East is not hard to do.
Right. So let me ask you a question, Zach. So you're the Orlando Magic, and management and ownership want to host two playoff games, you know, and this happens every year with some bubble teams, you know, especially in the East where, you know, you probably could even maybe sneak in. 40 wins might even get you two home games. And those home games earn you revenue. It's real. It's not just, oh, it's great for renewals or anything else. Like, you know, $2.5 million. I mean, it is real revenue to teams who need revenue. Is there a market for Vooch? What are the phone calls to Weltman and Hammond sound like? Are there teams that actually look at this guy who's an expiring and say, you know what, we would gladly part with a, you know, a reasonable asset. I mean, can you imagine this guy, you know, on a team that needs, you know, one more kind of versatile scorer, a big who can stretch and drive and isn't a bad passer? I mean, like, if you're Boston, it's like, I'm just wondering, surely there are teams out there looking at this guy and saying, you know, in a really competitive playoff field, he is a difference maker. He is truly like one of the 15 best offensive players in the game right now. Like, so how do we conceive of this? I mean, is that something that could happen?
So you hit
Orlando, is it just like, forget it, we want to make the playoffs?
So they're a top five most interesting trade deadline team, not only because of Vucevic, but because of Ross, and on an expiring Terrence Ross,
right.
Terry Ross, and I, you know, at some point they're going to entertain the idea of trading Gordon. That's why they signed him to that descending contract that will increasingly turn into a bargain. And they just have to arrive at a place where it's like, we're 40 games into the season. Boy, I mean, if you're really going to go all in on Bamba and Isaac, like, start it, play it. I mean, you are embracing pain. You are embracing minimum the next season and a half as the worst team in the NBA, because those guys aren't ready, and no one should have expected them to be ready. Vucevic is really good. I bet Steve Clifford wants to make the playoffs even more than the front office there. That's another part of the dynamic. So I think they value Vuce not only as a player, but like as a bridge player. Like, I don't think they would mind re-signing Vuce. Given how far, not far behind, but how far those other guys have to go, and ditto for Gordon. The team I've wanted to get Vuce all season, I even wrote about it in the preseason, if you could find a way to get him on the Lakers, I would get so, so excited to watch the Lakers, because this is what I've said over and over again. We keep seeing the Lakers. Before Tyson Chandler, we said, well, they don't have enough shooting and they don't have enough centers. I was like, well, I can think of a couple guys who bring you both, one of whom you had on your team and is now shooting 29-footers for the freaking Bucks, and you just didn't seem to care about very much. And Vuce is another one. But I just, you know, for a team that's saving its trade assets for something else and doesn't have, like, a lot of super exciting stuff to offer other than those things, and even those things aren't that exciting, I just don't know what the deal is.
It is fun to think about. You're right. Schematically, it works. You know, he's only 28. I mean, he's got his next contract. We'll still keep him squarely in his prime. He's in good shape. He's just a fascinating player. I mean, he's marooned in Orlando. And do you think, knowing that this is always an interesting, as we know about Golden State, nobody wants to help them out. It's 29 on one. No owner wants to be party to sort of enabling the Warriors to do anything. We have the Robin Lopez situation. Do we feel the same way? Is there a bias other than in San Antonio? Obviously there is. Are there teams that would be, like in Orlando, that would be reluctant to move him to the Lakers? Or they're not enough of a threat to really warrant. If there's an asset there, they'll take it. I just don't know what the Lakers deal.
Magic are in a position to turn up their nose at any deal with anybody after being completely irrelevant for the last 5 or 6 years, then God bless them. Whatever they think is best for the franchise, they should do without concerns for any of these things.
Construct a deal. Lakers, I mean, obviously, they're not going to trade expiring for him. They'd rather have Vuce than KCP. So this notion that KCP is somehow a trade asset, there's no motivation to do that. I mean, if you trade Vuce, it's because you get future assets back. You get, you know, either a player on a good deal, you get a pick, or a series of picks, whatever it is. And I'm just trying to kind of construct a deal. But I think we're getting far in the weeds.
It's hard. That's why I said it's hard, because the stuff that they would trade, Orlando doesn't want. And with KCP, you have to remember who his agent is and what that means, and all that. You look at the teams that are going to be motivated to trade for a center. Now, the Rockets become interesting if they get in trouble here, or Capella is going to be out longer than previously thought. They've already shown a willingness to trade picks willy-nilly, if need be. But, I mean, there's just not many other teams that are motivated to win now that need centers or want to move centers. So back to All-Star. So we have 10 locks in the East. To review, they are Kyrie Irving, Bradley Beal, Giannis, Kawhi, Embiid, Blake Griffin, Vuce, Oladipo, Kemba Walker, and Ben Simmons. That leaves two spots. Two spots, my friend. Who you got?
So, you know, I have some interesting choices. I mean, obviously, Chris Middleton, Jimmy Butler. I also have J.J. Redick as a potential dark horse here.
I think there's a real case.
You know, I don't know if there's ever been a situation where a guy like Sabonis can even get consideration given he's under 30 a game.
Can I use your mention of him as a quick tangent for you?
Yes.
First of all, I don't think I love Sabonis. I mean, you just couldn't build a player like a passing big man with a little bit of nasty streak and likes to dunk on people.
And I worship at the same church. I mean, yeah.
I just as a reserve, you're playing so many of your minutes against opposing reserves that I just don't think you should make an all-star team. That said, so here's a question for you. The Pacers are third in the East. Team success, blah, 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 right? So you kind of want to, is there a way I can get another Pacer in there? Who's the second best player on the Pacers?
I'm a Miles Turner guy. I don't think that's the answer. Thad has been contract year Thad Young. I mean, contract year Thad Young is something to behold. He has been, I don't think he is the second best player. He has been the second best player. But it's a tough question. Actually, I think Sabonis is the second best player, which is why I have him.
Can be any of Sabonis, Bogdanovich, who's just absolutely rock solid and shooting the hell out of the ball, and Turner. And one of the stories of the season is, remember, they could not win without Oladipo last year. They were 0-1 whatever when he rested, and they actually weathered his injury very well this year. I think the way he's played defense, I think it actually might be Turner. As much as I sort of enjoy watching the other two play a little bit more, his defense, I mean, he has made a huge leap in terms of his footwork, his timing. He gets no attention in the Defensive Player of the Year conversation because there's this, I think there's a perception of, he was so far behind but he was so far away from that conversation last year, despite the high block totals and all the highlight stuff, that he can't possibly be in it this year. And you have Gobert and Draymond and Paul George and all these high wattage kind of names. I kind of think he belongs in that conversation.
But he's right now on my all NBA defense team. Although we'll have to screw around with positions, of course, because that's how they do it. I'll tell you some other names. Bledsoe and Siakam are also.
Yep.
And Andre Drummond.
No.
You know, I mean, Drummond's a... Huh?
I'm out on Andre Drummond as an all-star.
Yeah. I don't love the... Again, and he's toward the bottom of this consideration list. But, it rates, and I just don't... Now it would be tough to have a second Piston, given what they are collectively. But this has been really tough for me. I mean, it kind of comes down to, I am leaning Butler Middleton, even acknowledging that I think Middleton hasn't had the season I was hoping he'd have. And by the way, I mean, I think the thing with Middleton, where I'm very sympathetic, he's a guy who has traditionally liked to know where his shots are coming from. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that kind of player. He's a planner. As a planner, as an INTJ, I appreciate this. And I think it has been, talking with Chris offline when I was spending time with them, and he didn't say there's any kind of complaint. This was a few weeks ago, and he's had a series of really good games since. And one of the things he's saying is he loves the new system. He loves what it's doing for Giannis. The results speak for themselves. Individually, a read-and-react system. It's not, by the way, he's a high IQ player. It's not that he doesn't know how to read and react. It's just when you play in Bud's system, you don't necessarily know possession to possession where your shots are coming from. Yeah, there are play calls on occasion, but it is you just don't know. And certain guys require a certain comfort level, and they do like a script. They're not improv players. And I think Middleton is becoming one, but it has been in a complete adjustment to who he is. That said, the numbers are quite good for Middleton. There is a statistical case for Middleton. I think defensively he's not what, you know, I think the Milwaukee coaching staff thinks he can be, but he'll get there. You know, but I mean, am I giving Butler name ID preference here?
Well, I am on principle disqualifying Butler. I just don't think you get to sabotage your team or participate in the sabotage of your team for 15 games in a particular season. And remember, you're talking to someone who I'm really just looking mostly at these, you know, Pelton considers track record a lot more than I do. I'm mostly looking at these 45 games, 15 of them or whatever he spent participating in the ruination of the Minnesota Timberwolves. I just, and really doing it in sort of a scorched earth way. I just don't think you get to do that and force a trade and immediately cause some rumblings in your new place that, uh-oh, something's happening. I just don't think you get to do all that and make the All-Star team that year. You get 1 year off. You can go in the skills competition. Work on the bounce pass through the tire. Okay? Work on the bounce pass through the tire. Work on it. You don't get in this year.
Go on the timeout corner.
You don't get in this year. Not on my ballot. You can come back next year and get on. You're one of the 12 best players in the East, I think. He hasn't really lit the world on fire in Philadelphia. Maybe that's unfair, but for me, I'm not. He's out this year. For me, who doesn't get a real vote?
I'm surprised you generally don't entertain these kinds of arguments.
What do you mean? Which arguments?
And I kind of, all the more reason I love it coming from you.
Oh, I see. I noticed one name has not come up at all, even in your others receiving votes list here, is Kyle Lowry.
It's funny. I wrote this in the, you know, I have to do the power rankings every week, which isn't the most substantial thing I do, but it is interesting because you really dig in. You know, you spend 15, 20 minutes a team kind of going through, and one of the things I wrote was, you know, Lowry's back. It's coincided with this win streak, and no matter how you slice and dice the Toronto Raptors, I don't care if he's 3-for-11, you know, with 9 assists. Like, his sheer presence on the floor. And I don't know that there's a player whose, you know, day-to-day production is more divorced from that effect, that positive effect, than Lowry. Like, it simply doesn't even matter the extent to which he's producing raw numbers on a given night, in a given week, on a given streak. He is so essential to their success. And again, it belies any of the statistics. And so I actually had him on there, but I do think the missed games was the sort of my factor. And he has missed a good handful of games.
So,
and frankly, in some of the games he's been in, you know, whether it's playing her at the back, whatever it might be, like, he hasn't been his full self. And so I left him off fully acknowledging that the ever-present Kyle Lowry, the one who isn't hurt or hasn't missed games, is a shoo-in to my list. I disqualified him.
The spooky Mulder contingent of Raptors fans are coming for you. Watch out. Watch out.
Hey, like, I covered them in the playoffs last year.
Doesn't matter. You're a hater. You're a hater.
I will tell Raptor Nation, like, listen to what I just said. Like, this guy is unbelievable. It's purely a missed game thing. Listen to me getting defensive as if there's, like, I'm looking out my window in Los Angeles and I'm seeing, like, Jurassic Park.
When you fly to Toronto next, when you get in that passport line at Pearson Airport.
Can I just say to Toronto fans, how much more do I go on TSN. This is the most cosmopolitan city in America. I have requested Toronto as a playoff assignment. Like, literally calling in shit so I could spend a month with sleet hitting me in April. Like, I love your restaurant. I love your demography. I love everything about it. I like that cute little airport near town.
Oh, Billy Bishop, baby.
My Porter Air, you know, whatever. Like, I love everything about it. And I love Kyle Lowry. I mean, I don't know how many – I have been – sort of a Kyle Lowry guy. And again, this is a testament to him. I have to leave him off. I just think the missed games and sort of the games that he didn't necessarily miss, but sort of are clearly, you know, suffering from injury. It is purely that is the only factor, because if you're telling me the 12 guys who are most important to their teams and whose mere presence on the floor produces success, the answer is Kyle Lowry. Yeah, he's in there.
But not
this year.
We'll wrap with this. I don't know what I'm going to do. I think he's the most difficult and interesting All-Star candidate in a long time, because everything you said is true. he's almost so he comes out of the season like a lightning bolt, just playing out of his mind.
Out of his mind.
And then it slows down. He has a back injury. Now it's almost like he's almost playing possum. Like he's almost going out of his way not to exert his influence on the game offensively in the ways that Russell Westbrook does. Like he passes out of shots. He passes out of driving opportunities, and he passes other guys into great shots. And there is something, and yet all the advanced stats, even with that level of passivity, all of them paint him as a no-brainer candidate. Even the ones that rely to some degree on like volume and usage still love him. Mm-hmm. And the other ones, the ones that are like plus minus and adjusted plus minus, they paint him as an MVP candidate. There's just something about the way he moves on the floor. And I think those numbers are capturing like he's always in motion. He's always cutting. He has an enormous amount of gravity. He's a smart passer. He's a smart inside out passer. He makes productive passes. He's a very good defender. I think the numbers are capturing just sort of his floating value around the floor. Like he's just kind of always on his toes and moving and doing stuff. And it's helpful. Now the dilemma is if you put him in, I had one front office guy put it like this. The advanced stats make an enormous case for Pascal Siakam.
Yes.
Enormous. I had one front office guy, and you know I bounce this off a million people, say, look, I get it all. Get everything you're saying. If we as a league and you as a voter, not a voter, a roster picker with no authority, have arrived at a point where Pascal Siakam makes an all-star team over Kyle Lowry, it's just dumb. One guy is better than the other guy. One guy means more to his team than the other guy. But Lowry's missed X amount of games. Kawhi's missed, I think, 11 games, maybe 10. Their absences have not overlapped to the degree that they're both out at the same time at a whole bunch. And so who lifts up to be the second guy? Who lifts up to the point that they're almost the second guy like all the time for the Raptors this season in terms of bringing the ball up, initiating the offense, creating for others, defending all five positions? Pascal Siakam. And then you get to the point like, can I have both of them? Because if I got both, then Toronto's got three and Milwaukee's got one, and now I'm just up my own ass and I don't know what to do. So that's where I am.
It's very hard. And I love Siakam. I mean, I feel like I'm president of the Siakam fan club. His advanced numbers are great. His influence on the game is great. I'm probably going to settle. I'm not going to be as punitive with Jimmy, though I don't like the conduct either. And I'm probably going Jimmy Middleton with absolute consideration that, by the way, Eric Bledsoe should be a candidate here.
Eric Bledsoe's case by the numbers is stronger than Middleton's. But I think Middleton,
you think so?
I think his advanced numbers are better. Most of his numbers are better. I just think that Middleton, again, has, because of his shooting and because of his positional versatility, just and his ability to spot up, post up, pick and roll, blah, 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 just has a little more of that kind of floating value than Bled. Like, when I watch the Bucks, I feel Middleton's impact is more indispensable than Bledsoe's. But if you look at the Bucks, Brogdon's been unbelievable. Their whole starting five, all five of them, have had fantastic seasons. And then off the bench, they're getting stuff from Sterling Brown and DJ Wilson and George Hill. And, you know, I mean, Snell's been good. Ilyasova, when healthy, has been good. I mean, they are, again, another team that's like, maybe they really only have one all-star and 11 good players. Maybe that's what it is. And the Raptors' depth, conversely, the Raptors' depth, we mentioned the injuries to the top guys. Van Vliet's first 6 weeks were bad. Delon Wright hasn't found himself. JV's hurt. They're playing Monroe. CJ Miles is gone. Norm Powell was gone until the last 2 weeks. Their bench, which was the strongest point of their team last year, has fallen apart. Like, I don't think you can look at the Raptors and say they're winning with depth the way the Bucks are.
No, and it's actually funny. It's almost a Rorschach test in the sense that I'm looking at Bledsoe and Middleton, and you're absolutely right. We have gotten to a point where when I look at a perimeter player, why do my eyes first go to three-point percentage? As if that's the end-all, be-all definition of an effective perimeter guy, be him a one or a two or a three. Like, it's so interesting, right? Because you look at Bledsoe and you say, 30.8. I mean, we make an allowance for Russell Westbrook. We just do. for whatever reason, the overall production, everything you said, and your Russ pain. But you're right. I mean, looking, it's very interesting. Bledsoe. And also, the other thing about Bledsoe to consider is, I mean, he might be, you know, the best defensive point guard in the league right now.
He's trying.
It's that old
contract year Bledsoe.
We saw that, you know, early on with the Clippers. You know, we were when he was, you know, he was the backup to Chris Paul. You know, that's what we were talking. Future NBA first team all defender. This is one of the best ball defenders in the league at his position. The length, the strength, the feet, everything. And he's kind of showing that now. Middleton, you're right. There's something, whether it's the versatility, whether it's the size at the position, that we defer. Maybe if Butler, Middleton, with great consideration to these other guys.
And then you know what you're going to get. Rounding out this conversation to the point that you brought it up, to the point that you brought up earlier. You're going to get this is the perfect encapsulation of what you said. How dare you, Kevin Arnovitz, give the Raptors one and the Sixers three? And I don't necessarily think that's a valid argument, because the Sixers 5-15 are garbage, and so they need all three of those guys to lift up their floor, if you include JJ. But I am on some level, that just kind of makes me feel a little icky.
No, I hear you. I mean, so the flip rebuttal to that is, this is not the United Nations. Okay, this is not a representative body, right? We're taking individual players, rating them on their individual merits. We are taking into some account team success. We're taking into some account reputation, track record, etc. But at the end of the day, this is not a representative body. However, I'm with you. Makes me feel a little icky. Maybe your Butler, banishment timeout corner is the right way to go, if nothing else, than to solve this problem. I grant you everything, which means, we have to drop Redick off. But again, Lowry, it's a problem in terms of just missed games and sort of raw production. And then you got back to Siakam, which is, hey, are we really there yet? We're Siakam. But let me ask you a question. What if Siakam is just sort of Draymond Green-esque? Was Draymond always included because he was a Warrior, because they substantiated having that many guys, because he's just so ridiculous? Because this, Siakam is kind of doing, for the best team in the East, Draymond-ish, prime Draymond-ish kind of things. So the idea that, we can't have an all-star game if a guy without sort of that thing that we expect from all-stars, that sort of singular, whether it's scoring, or in Gobert's case, just sort of all-around dominance for 70% of the game. Yeah, we can't do that. But I don't know. You're right. It makes me feel icky, too.
I think you should go all the way and put Redick in, too. Put four Sixers in.
All right. So screw Middleton now. It's four Sixers.
Four Sixers.
One Buck, one Raptor.
Yeah, put four in. There's no right answers to these questions.
And screw Nick Nurse. Brett Brown is coaching this game. I don't care where they are in the standings.
I think that's what you should do. All right. That's the All-Star conversation for the year. Kevin, it's always good to chat. And it sounds like if I get good enough weather here in New York this weekend, I'll see you in L.A. on Monday for the Warriors and the Lakers, which will sure to be a calm and placid atmosphere at Staples Center for Warriors-Lakers. Next week.
The circus is in town.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
The Low Post is presented by Goodyear. Drive always discovers possibilities. Goodyear, more driven.